Welcome to The Feast Life, where we empower you, the modern homeschool mom, to create a life and homeschool you love, one founded on faith, family, freedom, and fun. I'm your host, Julie Ross, creator of the award-winning homeschool curriculum, A Gentle Feast, and a certified Christian life coach. For more information on today's episode and to access my free gift for you, check out thefeastlife.me. Charlotte Mason once said, "Life should be all living, not a mere tedious passing of time." So on this show, we seek to savor the feast of life. Girl, grab your favorite beverage and pull up a chair. You are welcome at this table. Hey, are you struggling to make math a joy instead of a chore in your homeschool? In this episode of The Feast Life, I am talking to Emily and Heather, the creators of Beauty and Truth Math, and we're going to dive in to how mathematics can be a truly life-giving subject. These creators are here to show you how math can reflect the beauty, order, and truth in God's Word. Whether you're a math phobic or math loving, this conversation will transform how you approach math in your homeschool. Let's dive in. Hey everyone, welcome to The Feast Life. I'm your host, Julie Ross, and I am here today with Heather and Emily from Beauty and Truth Math. Hey guys.
Hello.
So this is really exciting. This is actually the first time I've ever interviewed two people at the same time.
We were wondering, we watched some of your episodes recently and we're like, has she ever done two people?
No, so you guys get to be my guinea pig. So thank you for being willing. So today we're going to be talking about a subject that often feels daunting for a lot of homeschool parents and how we can use a life-giving approach to teach math. And so before we get started, can you guys just take a second to introduce yourselves and then just tell a little bit about like your homeschool journey and then we can dive into what y'all are doing.
Sure. Emily, you want to start on this one?
Sure. I'm Emily Alcati and I have 5 kiddos. We have 4 boys, and then we're in the process of adopting a little girl. And we have been homeschooling from the very beginning. We started with some different methods and different philosophies, but landed on Charlotte Mason pretty early on. I think my oldest was in first grade. Yeah. We've been doing Charlotte Mason this whole time. And now my oldest is in 9th grade, started high school this year. And so it has been an adventure.
That's cool.
Yeah. All right. I started researching homeschooling options when my oldest was like 3, I think, maybe 4, and found some Charlotte Mason resources on Facebook and podcasts. And I think I took a quiz, one of those like personality for homeschooler type quizzes, and Charlotte Mason was high up there. So I was like, I don't really know about this, and quickly fell in love. I think I researched it for at least 2 years before we got to jump in with my oldest. So I have 4 kiddos, 3 girls and a boy, and we've been homeschooling Charlotte Mason since the beginning. And my oldest is now in 5th grade. Okay. Nope, 6th. Yep. 6th grade. So I have 6th, 4th, 2nd, and kindergarten.
Oh, you're Charlotte Mason homeschooler because you have a lovely collection of books.
Thank you.
Very impressive. Yeah. Do you have like little dividers? Is that what I see coming out?
Because they're magazine, magazine for, I use the Dewey Decimal System, but I don't deal with all the stickers. So I just have them like penciled inside.
That is so brilliant. I love how organized it is. That's beautiful. I love it. Okay. So you all have a company called Beauty and Truth Math. So I'm so curious to know, how did it come about where you're like, yes, let's write a math curriculum? So who would like to dive in with that?
It was like our lifelong dream, Heather,
right? Absolutely. Yeah.
I grew up. Great. Math
curriculum. So I was like, I would not do that ever. I have taught math. So that's a little bit about my background. I have taught middle and high school math. I have a math degree and then a secondary education minor. And yeah, when my oldest was, I guess in 2nd grade, we had used all the available Charlotte Mason math resources out there. And I was like, oh my goodness, I have to come up with something for him on my own. So we started using the Strayer Upton books. I loved the books. They were just daunting and overwhelming trying to use them. And I was like, if I'm a math teacher and I struggle to use these books. And my reading group friends from Charlotte Mason Reading Group, we were reading through the volumes together. They had some of the similar questions I did. And I was like, okay, I got to research this and start writing some lessons. So I did and started making those available to them. And then it got out to some neighboring reading groups and they wanted them online. And so I guess I launched the website in January or February of 2021.
Okay.
And did not even have a full year.
Wow.
First two terms of years 3 and 4. And Liz Cottrill of Dialectical Education just encouraged me to, I am so thankful that she did, or else I don't think that I would, because I'm one of those people, I'm like, I have to have this exactly right before I publish it or whatever.
Right.
And
yeah.
It never happens. it's never perfect. It's just due. It needs to be done. And then in May of 2021, Heather, have emailed and said, hey, are you going to do years 1 and 2? Can we chat on the phone?
No way. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I don't have time for that. But I would love
to. Yeah.
So that's where Heather came in.
Yeah. Yeah. So I also taught high school math for 4 years. That my degree was in secondary math education. I minored in Spanish. So loved math. And I remember I was tutoring once I stopped teaching. I stopped teaching in May of 2019 and had my first baby in June. I never looked back at going back to working in the schools, but was tutoring math, I think through my third. At some point, I ended up helping my mom homeschool my youngest sister with Charlotte Mason's method. There's a huge age gap because she's adopted and quite a bit younger than me. And so I was using Strayer Upton books with her.
Okay.
And when my youngest was in first grade, my sister was in high school and I took on homeschooling both of them full time.
Oh, wow.
With lots of littles underfoot. So I was using the Strayer Upton books with my sister, and it had heard just through different Facebook groups and stuff about Emily's products coming out and liked what I had used, but wanted a little more variety and just a few different tweaks that I knew I wanted to do. And I loved the Strayer Upton books. So when I knew that's what she was using, I was like, what are the chances she'll have a year one for my second? So I just emailed her hoping like maybe she's got something in the pipeline.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's so fun looking back because she's like, we have a phone call. And I was like, sure. Like, I'm not sure what this is about. I think I had said, hey, I'm thinking about putting my own first grade stuff together for my next kiddo, because I want to ease into the Strayer Upton books. Yeah. So we had a phone call in May. I think it might've just been on Voxer. Actually, we started talking, I think it was by mid June, maybe, or mid July that we like did the formal, make sure here's how we'll set up the business partnership if this goes well. And
yeah,
I started writing years 1 and 2 that year, wrote 2 years of guides in less than a year. And we haven't looked back. We've got
impressive. So for people who aren't familiar, what is Strayer Upton and how is that different than your traditional math book?
Sure. Emily, you want to take that one?
Yeah. So Strayer Upton is a series of math books that were written, I think, in the 1930s. Does that sound correct? I should.
I'm not sure.
And that just focus on mathematical ideas. They are very conducive to use within the Charlotte Mason education because they go from the concrete to the imaginary to the abstract. You'll see word problems first. So that's the concrete that kids can use, manipulatives or whatever, to represent those word problems. And then you'll find the abstract or the pure number problems towards the end, which is a little bit backwards than, or very backwards from the textbooks that I used in my growing up years and the textbooks that I've taught from. So, and just traditional education. So that was, that's an overview of the Sherry Upton books. Those are the books that we use for the arithmetic streams. And we do have other streams and other books that we use for those, but that's.
So let's hone in on what you just said. Because this is another thing that is very unique to Charlotte Mason's approach to math. She has streams of history. She has streams of science. She also has streams in math. So people that are used to that probably can figure out what's happening. But as someone's, I don't know what you're talking about. But what does math have to do with water? Okay. Yeah. So what are we talking about with streams?
I can take this one. You want me to?
Like, it's your turn.
Yeah. Okay. So streams of math, what Charlotte Mason did in her schools, we went back and I have massive spreadsheets of all her programs of what she did in the math first through high school. And then we also tracked down pretty much all her book from the UK. And it's
yeah,
like
what I did with that.
Through between the programs and then actually getting to look at her books, we can see that her books focused on arithmetic for years 1 through 4, first through fourth grade. And then in fifth grade, the students started a day of practical geometry, which is hands-on geometry explorations. It's really fun. We'll probably get to this at some point. Emily loves geometry. It is not my favorite, hasn't been my favorite. But now that my oldest is doing it, I was telling her today, I was like, I'm enjoying geometry finally. Like, it's a lot of fun. So they get to do, they're proving things without realizing it. It's very informal, but they get really used to the tools and they're exploring the mathematical ideas instead of just being told, here's this proof that you need to show works. So they do that one day a week, starting in fifth grade. And then in about sixth or seventh grade, they would also start a day of elementary algebra, a kind of the equivalent of pre-algebra for us.
Yep.
And so as those streams, you've got a arithmetic stream, geometry and algebra, as those come in, the geometry and algebra start taking over and the arithmetic decreases. Mm-hmm. So by the time students graduated high school in Charlotte Mason schools, they had done a high school credit, so to speak, of algebra, geometry, and about half of algebra two.
Okay.
And then also a full year of consumer math credit, but that was done over 4 years. So instead of doing a traditional algebra in freshman year, geometry sophomore year, they were doing them simultaneously, different days of the week. Yeah, I think it's brilliant for a variety of reasons. But that's the overview of why we call them streams there.
Okay, okay. So yeah, it's very similar to, you have 2 days of American history, 1 day of world history.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you're getting, so I want to know the why. So like you said, there's many benefits.
Yeah.
Why? And it's really, when you think about it, it's not that different than, I was a public school teacher too. So like when I taught fifth grade, like our math book, it had some chapters on beginning algebra concepts. It had some, the geometry was definitely less hands-on than what this is, but it had some geometry chapters, right? It had some arithmetic chapters. So they're getting parts of it. So it's not like that foreign from what we might be used to, but especially like in high school where it's very much take this class in this grade, this class in this, it's, that is a little different, but I think overall it's not that hard to grasp. But why did she approach it that way? What are the benefits?
Emily, you want
to? I like to think of, I guess, as instead of like a fire hose or like one chapter, like you focus on geometry for one chapter and then you're done with it in fifth grade or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's more like a trickle all throughout the year. And so their brains are always thinking about it in some way, shape or form throughout the entire year, instead of just focusing in on that one subject for just a little bit of time and then not coming back to it. Does that make sense?
They can build on the skill over time.
For me, seeing with my oldest now doing all three streams, it provides variety. Some students really struggle with geometry and some struggle with algebra or even arithmetic, and they're able to make connections between the ideas that I think you would miss if you're just doing like a chapter of geometry in chapter 8 of your fifth grade year. And so some of it's just the beauty of, oh, fractions on a ruler compared to fractions with arithmetic, like they're getting different, the mathematical ideas are similar or the same, but the representation's completely different.
Yeah.
And so we're able to see kids make connections across the streams in a way that I think gets missed with traditional school. And then also with the streams of math, if a student is quote unquote behind grade level for arithmetic, they don't have to wait to catch up in that to necessarily start the next stream. So we've actually been able to see kids get more on if they're behind of where typical students would be expected. And there's a range there. We're not going to say you absolutely have to be right at grade level or whatever, but within a year, ideally, is where we would want students. They're able to start if you're in third grade arithmetic, but you're in fifth grade and you're trying to speed that up. You can start practical geometry and get that stream going so that you're not pacing wise behind where we would like you to be by the time you get to your freshman year of high school. So there's so much flexibility within it because it's divvied out. It's been really cool to help customers. Like, it's very customizable. Would you agree, Emily?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of my sons has greatly benefited from this. He has just been diagnosed with dyslexia and he has struggled with arithmetic, especially for years and just the math facts, but where he has been able to just keep going in the geometry and the algebra, even he loves algebra. And he's, I'm so good at it. He's very confident and he really enjoys the algebra ideas. So that hasn't held him back, the math facts or the arithmetic. So it has been beautiful.
Yeah.
Speaking of beautiful, so you call your math curriculum beauty and truth. Probably not two words most people would originally put with math if they didn't have experience growing up like me. So why do you call it beauty and truth and where is the beauty and truth in it?
Emily named it. I jumped in later. So I'm passing this one back to her.
Charlotte Mason talks about just the beauty of obviously living life. Your podcast is focusing on the life and living it to the fullest, especially as believers. And math is beautiful. It allows us to see patterns and allows us to get, and one of the main focuses of our math curriculum is the focus of the student developing a real love for the Lord, of deepening a love for the Lord because of how beautiful he has made the universe and how math is just part of it. And it is, it consists of laws that were written from the very beginning and have nothing to do with us. So that is where the beauty of it is and the truth. It is always, it's always there. It never changes. And so the students can hang on to that and that they can get to know their creator in those different ways through the beauty and the truth of math.
Yeah, I love that. The name really resonates for sure. And I think it's encouraging for parents to even know doing these kind of things like all of Charlotte Mason education can really change your view of a subject that I've liked growing up. I've seen that with many folks. So let's break it down here, like super practical. Okay. So how do I go about starting with this approach? And then just give me like a typical day. Like, what am I doing with my kid on Monday?
You want to go for it, Heather?
Sure. I'll take a stab. Are you asking specifically about our products or just in if general? Cause we can answer anyway.
You can answer with your curriculum.
Okay. So with our guide
and the books, what would I do? What am I doing that's different than maybe a typical math lesson?
Sure. Okay. The first thing you're doing is you're not stressing about memorizing math facts. Yes, we get a lot of concerned emails about that. But in my mind, when we're approaching a lesson, it's, okay, what's the big idea here? And our products are specifically teacher scripted lessons. Right. You can literally read the lesson. We've got all the answers there for you. And then we use the Strayer Upton books are a beautiful like database in my mind of math problems. So we don't have to write all those. Okay. So we're using those for students to explore the math ideas. So a typical day would be maybe briefly reviewing the previous lesson to help them make connections, reviewing, asking some questions of ideas that they'll see again in the new lesson or that might tie to it. And then it's often, okay, what happened, like giving a word problem for the younger years of what is, I don't know, I'm trying to think, I'm in second, fourth, and sixth grade right now. Something with the numbers in the thousands. Okay, write this down on your whiteboard. And if the student is conceptually struggling with the idea of carrying place value and stuff, they can use money or other representations for the place value, and then they're adding or subtracting, and they're exploring with physical manipulatives how to solve a problem. So it's very different from direct teaching of here's what you do, memorize this formula.
And let's do it 17 times so we make sure that you remember exactly the steps.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Which kills me when we get emails and it's a first grader who hates math or thinks they're bad at math. You're so young in your math journey. Like, what is going wrong here? The ideas are explore and they don't have to master it right away. You can loop back and see it again. Each year in our guide specifically, Emily's done a phenomenal job of approaching fractions from different perspectives in the second through fifth and beyond. So there's a lot of hands-on exploration. We're not trying to pressure them to memorize their math facts. They're allowed to use the tables they've created when solving problems. But through that, we do want them practicing them, mainly because it saves a lot of time, which they'll realize if they're pulling out an additional multiplication table all the time to reference. And then the goal is that they're seeing making connections. And if lessons are very short, they're varied and they're short. I think that's a huge piece. Like, we cut off at 20 minutes through, is it third or fourth grade, Emily? Is it third through third grade? Yeah. And it's only a half hour through sixth grade.
Okay.
So they're short. That's unusual as well. What else did we say? Conceptual, the streams. We're training them in habits is a focus much more than like math is right or wrong. And so there's an accuracy required. That's why I loved my English classes, but I knew I could never teach them. It was just like, I would probably grade way easier on the kids I liked and not so much I had trouble with. So the exactness and accuracy and truthfulness of math, we try to highlight, and even pointing out throughout our guides of like scripture and Proverbs talks about equal weights and measures. And there's a justice issue behind understanding math of treating people fairly and honestly. So trying to help them see, look, you can serve people through being honest, through understanding this, being a good steward of your money. So we're trying to make connections beyond you need to pass a test, which is what I used to teach. Like, yes, my algebra too. Why do I need to know this? So you can graduate high school. Yeah, and now it's so you can love the Lord and serve others. And you might never use, X squared again, but just expanding these ideas is good for your mental growth and spiritual growth. As you see, this is all truth that the Lord has ordained and it doesn't change.
No, that's beautiful. Yeah. Really great picture. Thank you for breaking it down. And I do feel like what's so wonderful about what you've all created is it's what you're doing all day long. If you're doing a Charlotte Mason education, you're doing short varied lessons. You are talking about ideas. You have different streams and education's a science of relations and they're connecting and you're discussing and you're talking and the kids are moving from concrete, like, where's the directions in my schoolroom, to abstract and learn the world. It's the same thing in every subject, but math is what has been like this. There's nothing out there. We don't know what to do about that. trying to do it on your own. Because I looked at the Strayer Upton books when I first started. I was like, whoa, nope.
Yeah.
I don't know that. So it's so great that you guys have been able to break it down. Now, what about a parent that has like multiple children? Is the parent, like you said, there's like scripted lessons, so for every age, are they reading this to them, or how does that all work?
So there is a variety. The younger years, we do have scripted lessons that the teacher or the parent would read to the student, and it's not so much like you have to follow this script, it's just a conversation that you could have with your student. It's a way we're presenting a way that the ideas can be developed. And so it does take some time. It is a little teacher intensive, especially prepping. We encourage new families to sit down with all of the things that they get when they purchase a guide and spend about an hour and a half to 2 hours just to really comb through all the things that we put together and printing things off, just to make those day-to-day lessons a little bit more smooth. So I have done multiple students at the same time because I don't want to do math all day long. Yeah. And I have done different things with different kids. I have, and it looks different even year by year and sometimes even term by term, depending on what season my students are in.
Right.
So there was one, I think the first year that my youngest boy started, like his first grade year, we just got up early because he was an early riser, and we did all of his stuff, especially his math, before anybody else was even awake, before breakfast even. And so that was his done. And I got to spend that one-on-one time with him. But you can stagger the lessons. I know Heather does that with students where she starts with one, and I've done this too, where we get one started and they get to a part in the lesson where it is more in. They are doing their student response, their independent work in their math notebook, and then you can start with the next. So different things like that. I would say to pray for creativity in how to, and a lot of wisdom in how to work your schedule and make it kind of fit your students and you in thinking about how to do math lessons. We do encourage teachers, parents, not to, if you have multiple math sessions going on, to try to schedule a break for yourself as well. Try to schedule some or history lesson in between those math blocks or like that. So you're not having to do math back to back with all of your students, because our brains need a break too.
Did they reach a point like when they're like in high school where they can follow the guide themselves or the parent teaching it?
Yes. Heather, you want to take that one?
Okay, you want me to take over? So a couple other thoughts to tag on what Emily said, and I'll answer your question in a moment, Julie. We also, with our guides, build in at least in first, second, and I think third grade, we have three lessons scripted for the week and then two review and catch-up days. So there's a lot of wiggle room. So if people jump into our guides and they're like, oh, I have a fifth grader, but with the way your scope and sequence works, he'd be in third grade. Like they can skip all the review and catch-up days if they're not needed and catch up more quickly that way or skip ideas they know. So we try, when I schedule students and stagger them, I'm trying to never teach more than two students new ideas. Ideally, I'm just teaching one and the other's doing more review.
I got you.
But then in third grade on, we have a student response at the end of most of our lessons, which is where basically it's their narration. They're practicing what they've done. And those we've created a new resources last summer where parents can print it and put it in the student notebook without the answers. So that is freed up some time for my lessons of, okay, here's what you need to do on your own now. Let me see it when you're done. So they don't even have to tell them what to do. It's printed out for them. And then in sixth grade with our guides, and it's flexible as to where students jump in, elementary algebra is written to the students. And then seventh grade on, we're writing completely to the students. So parents are still, it still requires parent involvement. You need to know how your kid's doing. We create a student guide and a teacher guide for those guides so that we have a one-page summary basically of what the student's learning for the parent to know. And then they have a teacher check-in at the end of pretty much every lesson. And the teacher guide specifically fleshes out a bit more of here's what you should be looking for. Here's things to know. And then we still build in review for our high school, like our algebra. I think I have like a three-page printout of parent for parents of, okay, if they're struggling with this idea, here's the problems to assign. Here's a second set. So the textbooks that we use, we don't write textbooks. We write the teacher and student interaction with the ideas piece. And the textbooks are just full of mathematical ideas. So it's a really, I've never seen anything like it. I love the way Emily created it. So it becomes more independent, but I would say you'll never be able to fully check out as a parent. Does that, yeah.
But I know a lot of parents are like, once we get past like fifth grade math, I'm out. Like, I don't remember how to do it myself. I definitely wouldn't know like how to teach high school algebra to my child. So having a resource where it's okay, it's written to the child, they're going through it, but I still know, okay, this is what to look for. If you're struggling with this, I mentioned this. Like that's a huge blessing for sure. Cause some of it's like you look at it and you're like, I guess ask me questions. I'm like, your guess is as good as mine. I have no idea. Let's go on YouTube. I have no idea how to solve this. So yeah, that's
One of our big hopes too is that as the parents go through it with the children, with the students, that they will learn, they'll be able to relearn some of the math ideas maybe in a new way than they were, than they were introduced to as they were going through it.
Are the holidays bringing you more stress than joy? Well, you're not alone. For many homeschool moms, the holiday season can feel like a never-ending list of demands, responsibilities, and difficult relationships to manage. You want to create a magical, joyful time for your family, but instead you end up feeling overwhelmed, drained, and stretched thin. Does this sound familiar? The never-ending to-do list, from homeschooling to holiday prep. How are you supposed to get it all done? Navigating difficult family dynamics and managing hurtful comments. Keeping your children happy and excited while trying to maintain peace at the same time. Feeling like there's just too much to do and not enough of you to go around. What if you could change all that? Imagine approaching this holiday season with a sense of calm, joy, and confidence, knowing that you can handle anything that comes your way, and creating beautiful memories can happen without stress or overwhelm. Introducing my course, The Peaceful and Joyful Holidays for Homeschool Moms. In this course, you'll discover life-changing tools and strategies that will help you move from stress and overwhelm to peace and confidence. You'll learn how to manage your emotions, strengthen your relationships, and create a joyful, meaningful holiday for your family without losing yourself in the process. If you want to learn more about this course, go to thefeastlife.me/holidays. Again, that's thefeastlife.me/holidays. I hope you can join me in this amazing course. You deserve to enjoy the holidays. You deserve to feel peace and joy with your family. And you deserve to feel confident navigating even the most challenging relationships. Enroll in joyful and peaceful holidays for homeschool moms today and make this season one you've always dreamed of, one filled with love, connection, and ease. So you touched on this a little bit, but how does this approach, or your guys, or whatever you want to, however you want to land there, like, help if a child is struggling? And then are there specific things that you would recommend parents do if their child is struggling?
I think it's different from a traditional, like, school setting, where as a teacher, I remember teaching like 22 kids in my class and being like, we have to move forward. We have to keep going. And so having to do lots of tutoring outside, and then the students just get more stressed when they feel behind, which is so discouraging. Like, no one wants to feel behind. So I think there's a couple pieces that come to mind for me. I'd be curious to hear Emily's thoughts on this too. Of first, you can meet them where they're at. So if it doesn't do any good to jump into seventh grade curriculum, if you don't know your fifth grade arithmetic piece that's needed for that, you're just going to be lost. So math is one. We tell people sometimes who email us, if their curriculum's working for them, like, you don't have to switch. Please don't, actually, because we want your kid to succeed and do well. And if they're doing great, you can throw it off really badly. Our curriculum's not for everyone. Because of the scope and sequence of ideas, eventually students all kind of meet knowing the same amount of, like, things. For math, by, I'd say, high school, there's like a general consensus on what's needed to be known, but the way to get there is so varied. So if they're struggling, sometimes we tell customers, jump in with geometry or skip to this other mathematical idea and come back. Sometimes it's, hey, like, I was emailing a customer this week whose daughter is struggling with carrying in addition. And I said, we've got a couple ways you could do it. You could spend a couple weeks. I don't remember how many pages it is, a packet that we give our forms 1 and 2, so years 1 through 6 arithmetic customers, of just a bunch of ideas I found when I was researching, like, archive math books of ideas of ways to do math. And so here's different ways to play with addition. Here's subtraction. Like, it doesn't have to be from a textbook. Do 37 plus 89 and there's so many, you can draw a triangle and put numbers on the sides and add going around it. There's a bunch of ways, go do hopscotch and have them add as they go. So giving them variety of practice, either focusing in on that or continue on, and then just have, I've done this with my kids of, okay, you're still not, I know you get this idea, but we're not there. So we're just at the beginning of each lesson, as long as I think we'll have time, let's do one practice problem and just see how we do. So we never want students to just stall out.
Right.
That's if you want to kill the joy of math, right. Stalling out because you haven't memorized your math facts or because one idea is not clicking is a guaranteed way in my mind to enjoy math. So there's different ways you can jump to other topics or you can review differently. Yeah, those are off the top of my head. What would you say, Emily?
Yeah, I think you covered it all. So
okay, we get these emails a lot.
Yeah, it's typical. Like, and every child develops at their different pace, but I feel like it's much more adaptable than everybody in fifth grade needs to be doing this, and they need to be doing this chapter, and you have to move on, whether you understand that chapter or not, and you're never going to see it again this year.
I will say our guides, I can't remember, a customer put it as they're telescopic, where they loop in. So in fourth grade, it's a very general, gentle introduction to fractions. They start in second grade with fractions, but in year four, they hit it pretty hard. But then it's also still an introduction. They're going to see it again in year five, and again in year six, and again in year seven. It's not going anywhere anytime. So they're going to see these ideas. We don't look for mastery the first pass through, or even, I mean, sometimes the second. It's okay to just hit on it, and those ideas can be in the back of their mind and there as they develop and grow. And it's okay if it doesn't click the first time. So
So are you saying it's sometimes it's okay to struggle and not
it is
know
okay
everything
to.
instantly the first time you're exposed to it? What? Mind-blowing
You
here,
also,
people.
as Emily's saying that last summer, the summer before, I don't know, it's a blur with how much we've been doing with this stuff, but in our guides, we now have symbols showing if it's okay, this is the last time they will see addition formally. So we try, like, we have symbols showing this is an introduction lesson, this is an exploring. I think probably 90% of our lessons are exploring ideas. And then we have in our semester or term guides, our introductions say, this is the big t ideas you're covering. Here's what you need to know as far as how important, like, they'll see this again or they won't. And here's where you need to bring it home. And then if they haven't mastered it by the time in our guides, we say they should. Not they should, but we're not going to cover it again. We say, like, here's what different ways to review it. And then our guides in each week, we have a one-page summary of what materials you need. So our weekly resource page is, in my mind, the gold of the lessons in terms of, okay, what do I need for this week? That's all I have to look at. So I read the introduction of what we're doing for the term, but it's not, I don't have to remember it all because there's always, we give like a quick summary of here's what you're covering this week. Here's what's important. And then our website has our scope and sequence, like a 5,000 foot view, and then like a detailed weekly one. So you can see on there as well. Oh, like fractions in second grade are just dividing by two is taking half of something. Like kids get that. They've cut peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. It's not hard, but if you say fractions in second grade, people might be like, ah, what are we doing? And it's no, this is like the most simple, gentle introduction,
Yes, I
which is
love
why
that.
we love the Strayer Upton books, because I'd never seen that before.
Yes, it's like I'm gently introducing this idea, but we're going to keep going and building upon it as we go.
Yeah, and we build for years.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you the question that I get asked about a dental feast and Charlotte Mason in general all the time. Will this prepare my child for college and future if they want to do math needed?
Careers.
There you go. See, that question, because
I
I
would
get
say
this question
yes.
all the time.
I think I can guarantee yes in terms of we're using high school textbooks that meet the national standards. Like we are following our Charlotte Mason did that, we discovered when we looked through her programs and looked through all her books and read a lot of her like CanEU articles and stuff or PUS. I would say religiously, she tracked the standards and those were important to her. So we followed suit in that in making sure we don't necessarily follow the timing exactly of the national. And we do national standards with the national, I don't know, Council of Mathematics Teachers, NC. Teachers of mathematics, something like that. It's what we use in college and what's the broad covers all the states. So if they are completing our guides, they are completing a high school credit when they finish the Algebra One textbook. They will have earned that. I would say they're even in some ways more prepared, I think, because with the streams of math, that is a unique skill that they're learning early. Because once you, if you are going into a math field in college, you're going to have multiple math courses. And that's not, you don't normally do that in high school. So I think the interconnecting, I don't know if that's quite the word I'm looking for, but the connections they can make between the streams and then they merge, which is really fun. Like you get to arithmetic and you get to personal fi consumer math and then personal finance and then statistics. The even if you're not a math major, statistics is used in so many degrees. So I would say yes, I think you can guarantee it in terms of both the were completing high school textbooks, but also by spreading out algebra over 2 years. I think there it's, how do you say it, Emily? I want to say marinating that. I don't know if that's the right word, but like they're chewing on these ideas for longer versus geometry. I took it my freshman year of high school and I was like, oh, I'll see it in college, I guess. Like, we're done. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And going along with that, I would also say our goal is the love of math. Mm-hmm. And if students have a love and a curiosity to know and to learn, mm-hmm. they're going to do what they want. They're going to go mm-hmm. on and they're going to have that internal motivation of mm-hmm. really diving deeply into the things that they really care about. So we, mm-hmm. that's really what our aim is. I have a student or had a student that isn't with me anymore because we do a Charlotte Mason, like a hybrid school 2 days a week. And she transferred. She's not doing that anymore. But at her new school, she has a math tutor because she has typically struggled in math. But I was talking to her tutor and she was like, she isn't afraid of math. She loves math. And that you cannot teach. Like that's the goal, right? And if you have a student who enjoys it and who isn't scared of it and is just willing to jump in there and try, they will go wherever God has plans for them and they'll succeed.
Yeah, that's a beautiful way to approach it. And like the traditional way that we have taught math for the last 100 years isn't working. Like we can look at the test scores and go, okay, our country, our kids are not at our national standards of grade levels, and not that's what we're striving for. They're not making them. So why do we feel like we need to replicate what they're doing in our house when we believe for all these other subjects, there's a better way.
Right.
But this one, we're just going to copy exactly, and we're going to make sure we're hitting all these things that they're supposed to be at these different levels because someone else is telling us that's what we should be doing. I totally appreciate what you all said. That's a great way to view it. And I definitely see that too, because you're teaching them really like how to think conceptually about math. That motivation and that love. And that is something that we can kill out of students really easily with the whole drill method of math.
Drill and kill.
Drill and kill in the top down, I'm the teacher, I'll pour into you model, right? Rather than the self-education. So I love that is still all incorporated into this. So to wrap up here, if a parent has been doing everything else for Charlotte Mason, I think I might want to bite the bullet and try math, but I'm scared. Mm-hmm. What words of encouragement would you give to them?
You want me to take this one? I can. Things immediately come to mind, Emily. You want to? Okay. I would say first, you don't need to be afraid because the Lord's equipped you to be your kid's parent. And he's the author of truth. He is the truth. So the Holy Spirit is like, at some point, maybe I'll create a resource for this. But in my own, like just mulling over all this, I had a diagram of like, okay, you've got so many relationships here in math. You have the mathematical ideas. You have the Lord, the parent, and the student. And the Holy Spirit is at work in all of that. And so the parent has their relationship with math. And if they have had an awful math experience, I want parents to tell their kid, like, we're trying this because I didn't enjoy it. And I want you to enjoy it. It is completely fine. And I think it's super valuable for parents to model learning new ideas again. Or doing, like Emily was saying, maybe learn as your kid, like me with history. Like I'm in sixth grade history right now. I don't remember what I learned in high school and further back. But you can go forth in confidence because the Lord is with you. And so we are happy to help. We've got, like, when people email us, and it's funny you say that because typically the email says, okay, I'm finally touching math. I've done everything else, Charlotte Mason. And I'll get that a lot. So you don't need to be afraid because the Lord's at work. And it's not just our guides that you need to use. We have a free resource on our website of here's what a Charlotte Mason app, like here's how to use any math book. Some will be easier than others.
Okay,
We're not the only Charlotte Mason resource, but parents love the handholding. Like in my mind, it's very detailed handholding. So I would say the Lord's with you. You're uniquely equipped to teach and care for your kids, and the Holy Spirit's at work in this. There's so many resources out there. You joke about YouTube, but that's one of the first places I go. And we do it when we research too. Like, how are people teaching multiplication? And there's so many things out there. It's so fun to see one explanation won't necessarily always work. In fact, I guarantee it won't always work. Trying to take different approaches and coming in with a desire to learn. And I just think when your kid is, you're going to hit times where your kid's exasperated and frustrated. Your relationship with your student and their relationship with the Lord, you and math, is more important than completing a math lesson. Mm. So we call them guides because we don't want it to be a legalistic. We have to check off everything. We really want it to be, use it as you need to. Yeah. And go forth with confidence, knowing the Lord's with you and there are resources out there. Ours is one of many. And then having conversations outside of math lessons when things are hard with your student is the other thing I would encourage. If your kid's exasperated or you are having a hard time of what can we do? Let's brainstorm together. You're on a team. Mm-hmm. And I think that often gets lost in the desire to make sure we meet the math standards. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I have this conversation pretty much on a daily basis with people about just because your child is frustrated or exasperated, the words you used, doesn't mean you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. And it doesn't mean you're doing something wrong. This is hard. Learning's hard. Especially a lot of kids, like this mathematical reasoning, or if they've come from traditional math and now they're actually having to do the hard work of thinking about it. And I say that with kind of textbook workbook style curriculum. And now they're having to read this hard stuff and process it and do the hard work of their self-education. They're going to push back. It's hard to do hard things. So it's instead of getting all upset about it, go, oh, this is what's supposed to happen.
Yeah. Take a big breath. This is character training. What an opportunity. Yeah.
Then don't make it a power struggle. Make it like you're saying, make it like a team. I'm here to help you. We have these resources. We have these guides and we're in this together and we can do hard things together. Make it more of a team approach. So I love that you said that. Emily, was there anything you wanted to add in terms of getting started?
I think that's great. That's all. And we answer emails all the time. So please, if you're interested in Beauty and Truth Math, reach out. We are happy to help. We love to help and we do personalized kind of things and help get families going depending on specific to your students. So in your situation. So we love to help.
Like your website in the show notes if people want to check it out. And then there was also, like you were saying, like a free, like getting started with this approach with Charlotte Mason guide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to think what the tab is.
Placement test or anything on there for people that are like, I don't know where to even go to start, or is it just based on here's your grade level, start here?
Go ahead, Emily. Sorry.
No, it's fine. It's more that we send them to our website where Heather was talking about. We have a 5,000 foot view of our curriculum. And so since all curriculums, math curriculums are so different, we have the parent look at that in terms of where their student was in the previous curriculum and then place them from that particular page. And then they go to the details for a more weekly overview of where exactly in the year they would land. So parents can purchase a full year guide or they can purchase specific terms or individual terms, depending on what they need. So we try to
make sure I'm clarifying. So if they were coming from something else, could they start in term two?
They could. Absolutely. Yeah. Term three.
Okay. So that is good to know because that's not typical. Usually you get to start at the beginning of the math book. Exactly. You start the math book.
Yeah.
Why is that different? Why can I start in term two or term three?
In my mind, it's because Emily chose to sell them by terms. but we wanted the flexibility of the multiplication, division, fractions being taught in second grade together. And it's just unit fractions, but that's very unique. So frequently people jump in mid-year two.
Okay.
Because, hey, even if they know some of their math facts, this is a really good way to introduce all these connected ideas together. Okay. Yeah. And then with the terms, it allows the flexibility. We don't want someone having to pay. We're trying to be budget friendly. The Strayer Upton books we use across multiple years. They're like $15. And then you can also get them as PDFs from yesterday's classics. So I'm trying to think, we use book two in grades two and three, or book one, sorry, in grades two and three. And then book two, we use grades third through fifth or fourth through six.
Four, five, and six.
Uh-huh. Four, five, and six. Yeah. So 3 years. And then we'll use the Strayer Upton, the third book, seventh, eighth, and ninth for the arithmetic stuff. So we're trying to be, they can jump in midway because we're meeting them where they're at.
Yeah, it's not intimidating of, oh my gosh, now we have to start all over. Like you can just jump in because it's these ideas and they're going to keep going back to them.
And that's why we build in the review catch-up days, because sometimes it's like, hey, your kid missed one idea from the previous term. Just here's the pages in Strayer Upton. Just review those, build those into review catch-up days. You don't need to start back a full 12 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so great. Thank you so much for coming on and just sharing your heart to both of us. And I think it really helps for people who are, this seems very intimidating. Like, you make it sound very reasonable, and it makes it sound like, oh, duh, this is what I'm doing for everything else. This is so simple. I understand this approach. Like, why would I not try this? So thank you guys for all the work that you've done to make it a little more accessible.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's episode of The Feast Life. Let's wrap up with a few key takeaways. Number one, math is beautiful. The beauty and truth in math aims to help students see math as a reflection of God's order and truth, moving beyond rote learning to understanding the beauty and patterns in problem solving. Number two, Charlotte Mason had different math streams. Their curriculum incorporates streams of math subjects, which are introduced gradually and revisited, allowing for deeper connections across arithmetic, geometry, and algebra. Math should have flexible real-life application. In a Charlotte Mason approach to mathematics, lessons are short and varied, allowing students to explore math ideas without pressure to memorize immediately. Parents can pace lessons based on each child's readiness. Number four, math is for all ages and abilities. Using this approach, it allows for struggling students to progress without feeling behind by using multiple entry points and providing alternative approaches. The Charlotte Mason approach to mathematics does prepare a child for future success. By aligning with national standards and integrating math into a Charlotte Mason education, students gain a solid math foundation that equips them for higher education and careers with a heart to serve others through their learning. I hope this episode has blessed you, and I hope that you can see the joy and beauty that is possible using a Charlotte Mason approach to mathematics. Thanks for listening. Hey there, Julie Ross here. I just wanted to say thank you for listening to today's episode. If you like this show, it would mean the world to me if you would leave a positive review in iTunes. This really does help people learn about the podcast. And each month, I will pick a winner to receive a free gift. Don't forget to check out all the free resources we created for you at thefeastlife.me. Thank you.